red and white Eiffel Tower up there on the West Hills at 25,000 watts. And also going out to you to the world via KBOO.FM, and in that manner to all the ships at sea.
And good morning. It is KBOO Portland, your community radio station. 1 minute now before 10 o'clock. In 15 minutes, join us for Flashpoints. Where does Bernie Sanders go from here? Also, the weekly election protection bulletin with Greg Palast. And a look at major breakthroughs in the use of non-psychoactive cannabis for medical use with journalist Martin Lee. At 11 on Between the Covers, we speak with Danielle Dutton about her novel Margaret the First, which dramatizes the life of Margaret Cavendish, the eccentric and creative 17th century duchess. And at 11:30 on Words and Pictures, the guest is Kathy Zielinski, the pioneering artist and filmmaker who's been called the queen of animated villains. But up next, it's Chris Andre hosting Air Cascadia with headlines, interviews, and commentary. Hey, thanks KBOO members for your generous support. Not a current member? You can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate Today.
Lanita Duke is back on the air, so join me at listener-supported KBOO Community Radio on Sunday, June 12th from 8 p.m. until 10, as we celebrate the music of Miss Roberta Flack while analyzing the 2016 Portland City Council race. Sunday night, June 12th from 8 p.m. until 10 on community-supported KBOO.
'Cause you and I back together again, the world in a spin.
Cascadia. Today is Thursday, June 9th, 2016, and you're listening to KBOO Portland, real radio for real people at 90.7 FM, KBOO.FM on the web. We're going to try today to talk to Chuck Sams in D.C. Chuck Sams, of course, is a coordinator at the Confederated Tribes of the Umatilla, and he's there to look at the Treaty of 1855. June 9th, 1855, that treaty was signed. The Nez Perce Nation stood back from a great deal of the negotiation. They had no intention of signing away their rights to fish in their part of the river. Dams be damned, they stood their ground. Other tribes, the politics of dealing with the American government were more, perhaps more complex. Nonetheless, Chuck Sam speaks for the Umatilla people, and we will be speaking to Chuck very shortly. We're also going to try to reach Heather Keen. She is with the Coeur d'Alene tribe. They are embarking on a very sacred event. They have canoes. Absolutely, each canoe is a work of art. Each one is carved beautifully with an animal head at the bow, and more continuing design along and around the stern. These huge wooden canoes made from a single log are out being paddled right now as we speak. So we will try to speak with Heather Keen, with the Coeur d'Alene people, possibly Hilo Hancock, their legislative director. We'll just see if we can do that. We are also, mystery guest, I think the name is correct. I've heard it spoken only once. I've never seen it written down. I'd love to find this person if he in fact exists. The person in question is Curtis Rooker. He is notable, and possibly not existent, whistleblower. Union Pacific, the railroad company that is running trains through Mosier right now, again, even as we speak, despite strong objections from the people of Mosier and despite safety concerns, which we wonder why OSHA hasn't stepped in and done its job. Apparently it hasn't, but I guess it takes a while. The Boley lawsuit is going to take a little while to get up on its feet, but nonetheless it will. And we've got Chuck Sams on the line. Good morning, Chuck. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Hi, Chris. How are you doing? I'm doing fine, thank you.
We're talking about the 1855 treaty right now, and what it accomplished and what it sold down the river, so to speak. And you're there, right? You're in D.C. You've seen the actual document.
I am. I'm currently actually standing right outside of Congressman Walden's office. We'll be having a meeting with him today to talk about a couple issues. One, the ancient one, and potentially a discussion regarding the derailment that happened in Mosier, Oregon, which is in the heart of his district. And as many folks know, yesterday he put some proposals forward on better rail safety and recognizing the tribe's rights to salmon. So we want to talk to him on how we can help him and how he can help us ensure our treaty rights. Today marks the 161st anniversary of the Treaty of 1855, and I first want to apologize to your listeners. I was supposed to join you yesterday, but I was actually in the National Archives, in the archive vault, and I couldn't actually call in or call out once inside there.
No, that's wonderful. I mean, you saw it and you were there. That's important. That has essence. And imagine, too, thinking down underneath your feet, the floors and further down and the concrete and down into the earth, which it was, in fact, the land of First Nations, of Indigenous peoples. All the land was, sacred or not. So you're standing there above layers and layers of accretion is remarkable in itself. I'm so glad that you actually got to see the document and be there. Can you talk a little bit about the treaty and its significance? Like, I'm wondering if Greg Walden understands this treaty. There are two sides to the treaty: the Indigenous perspective and the white perspective.
I believe the Northwest delegation, the current Northwest delegation, really has an understanding in that, whether they're on the Republican or Democratic side. And I think we're fortunate in having that. You know, years ago when Senator Gorton, Washington State, you know, he was known as last of the Union fighters, but we don't seem to have that type of opposition that we once had here in the Congress. And so the Treaty of 1855 was signed between us and the United States. And what makes it unique is that it's a peace treaty. It's not a treaty of war. What was most fascinating yesterday that I pointed out to two of my Board of Trustees members and the tribal members who came with us is under Article 2, at the very end of it, it calls for the president to issue arms and ammunition to the tribe from time to time. You know, that's a true indication that not only was it a treaty of peace, but the recognition that the United States knew that we could defend ourselves if necessary. And to that end, as I told the members who are here, we're continuing to defend ourselves. We may not be using bullets and ammunition, but we're using education, words, and actions in order to uphold the principles that were in the treaty of the rights that not only we granted the United States, but we reserved for ourselves.
That's remarkable. I'm glad to hear. I've been interested in the treaty for a long time. Now, regarding the train derailment in Mosia, that impacts fishing notably. And I'm wondering if Treaty of 1855, or perhaps just the law of the land, would dictate that some sort of reparations would be owed to the Confederated tribes, because
the treaty itself was written in a couple parts. One, of course, was the cession of lands to the United States, but it was also in the idea that the railroad was coming out. And so this highlights, once again, the railroad that does go through our reservation because of the Treaty of 1855. But it highlights those dangers not only for the tribal members on reservation, but for our fishing rights off reservation. There are several places along the Columbia River and the Columbia River Gorge where, had this train derailed anywhere else, it could have easily put in millions of gallons, hundreds of thousands of gallons of oil into the river system, causing huge degradation to salmon and water quality. We're very appreciative of the first responders who all showed up so quickly to avoid most of that, and appreciative of people continuing to work towards doing the cleanup right now.
So it's going to cost something to do that, and the railroad says that they will take on that the financial responsibility. I do still wonder about reparations, and the Confederated tribes should be compensated for degradation of the habitat and land. Anything happening along those lines? What's happening?
Well, there are a couple meetings. One today with the Yakima Nation is holding at Mosier, and another one that's going to happen this weekend with Senator Merkley and Representative Blumenauer, so that we can talk about that. And we'll have those discussions early on, because we don't have a full, we don't know everything that's happened yet. So as the cleanup is going along, once those determinations are made, I'm sure we'll be in those types of discussions with our elected officials.
Chuck, thank you so much for that. But there are so many points of conversation in this story, because, of course, there are two sides to it. I very often invoke Ada Pecos Melton. She's an Indigenous Nation scholar on law, and her analysis is a one-page summary of the differences between Indigenous law and American law, and it makes it quite clear that Indigenous law not only is a more humane system that does not damage families, lives, whole communities, but it accomplishes something. It's not simply punishment. How does Indigenous law look at this event, and how does it handle events such as this train derailment?
Well, Indigenous law sees that we have all a responsibility for the stewardship, and so when we take a resource that actually came from the earth and we're not using it appropriately, or that it causes degradation damage, we have a responsibility, all humans, to clean that up and fix it. And we will definitely be reiterating that to the elected officials here while we're in Washington, D.C. with the delegation, and really showing how that's lined out under the Treaty of 1855.
Thank you so much for this. Anything else that you would like to add? Any resources, websites, whatever, that you want to direct our listeners' attention to?
I would keep an eye out on our own website, ctuir.org. We'll be having news and updates through both our Confederate Newsletter Journal and just online in general. And checking out Columbia River Intertribal Fish Commission and the other tribes, the Warm Springs, Yakima, and Nez Perce, will all have updates on how the treaty tribes will be dealing with this issue over the coming weeks and months.
Thank you so much for that. We're really honored to speak with you, and it is really it's very, very, I think, exciting to be talking about Treaty of 1855 and actually looking at it on June 9th. So thanks again for that. We've been speaking, of course, with Chuck Sams. He is the information director. Director of the Umatilla Nation in Washington, D.C. right now, and working with our elected representatives on many matters. The train derailment, of course, is but one piece of the whole puzzle. I want to bring up a very important point. A while back, not that long ago, in March 1st, 2016, there comes a paper is Bakken crude and the Ford Pinto of rail cars. It's on the growing need for adequate regulation of transportation of crude oil by rail. It's part of the Environmental Law Commons, the Oil and Gas and Mineral Law Commons, and the Transportation Law Commons. And there are many, many, there's a huge bibliography here. This was done by the Villanova Environmental Law Consortium, and it's published in the journal. And we are going to be talking about that in the coming days. And especially, we're going to talk about railroad whistleblowers who have had a rough time dealing with Union Pacific. This has been Air Cascadia for Thursday, June 9th, 2016. And Rock Bergeron engineered the show for us today. Thanks, Rock. Kathleen Stevenson is the KBOOAM News and Public Affairs Director. I'm Chris Andre. Get the facts. Know your rights. Take a stand. Thanks for listening and stay tuned.
Flashpoints. Where does Bernie Sanders go from here? We'll talk to the founder of